Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Baker Mayfield spoke to the media yesterday, and it's the first time in quite some time he's done that. And that was not by accident, that was by design. You might recall, coming off his rookie season, Baker was one of the hottest names in all of sports. He was everywhere, and he was stirring things up. He was lighting guys up. He was spitting junk. I loved it. It was great. He was doing things and saying things that starting quarterbacks almost never say and never do. And he was interesting as hell. And he took heat for it, which made him even more interesting. And he kept right on doing it. However, he had a rough season last year, so now he is taking a far different approach this offseason. As he said, he's going to let his work do his talking for him this time around.
It's just time to work. It's time to do our thing instead of talking about it. This is the first media thing I've done just because there's no need to be talking about it. It's just time to go do it.
In other words, don't talk about it. Be about it. And I love that too. Look, I love this guy talking junk. I love this guy running his mouth. And now I love this guy shutting his mouth. I love this guy putting himself out there. And I love this guy now going tactical and laying low. What I'm saying to you is, I still love this dude. I love this dude either way. Listen, you can't really tell anything about anybody from a single media appearance, let alone one on a video call. But when I saw Baker yesterday, I had only one thought. Just one thought. Baker is back. Baker Mayfield is back. And the other thought leads to this thought. The Browns are back. The new America's team is ready to ride once again. Yeah, I said it. The new America's team. America's team 2.0. You see, there is a strategy to this. Baker has been turning down media requests because he wants to stay locked in. You know, keep the main thing, the main thing.
And right now it's, you know, kind of moving in silence, which is fine with me. It's how I used to do it before getting on a bigger stage. So I'm happy to get back to those roots. And like I said earlier, get back to the fundamentals to where I can accomplish the goals when the season comes around.
I like it. I like it a lot. No, last year did not go well for him. He knows this. The 21 picks was a huge spike from the year before. That's not what he's about. He knows he has to take care of the ball. He knows he has to get back to his roots and his fundamentals. And he's got a bright new head coach in Kevin Stefanski. He's got a new offense as well. Baker has been going to school on that offense.
I think it matches up very nicely. You know what? Being in control, getting checks in the run game, just being efficient. And last year, I know, was not a great year for turnovers, but I've always prided myself on not turning the ball over. And so that's something the conversations we've had is when we do take our shots, it has to be smart decisions, and there's nothing wrong with a good incompletion every once in a while. So the scheme-wise, I think my skill set matches up to that very well, and then also how he's coaching it. I think it's going to be a great fit.
So a few weeks back, he hosted 9 teammates in Texas to work out and go over that offense. Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry could not make it because they're both recovering from surgery, but new tight end Austin Hooper was there. Mayfield said the entire time was an excellent experience.
It was good for everybody to be around, speaking the same terminology, like I said, and, you know, just kind of hanging out, you know, during all this. You're kind of stuck at home, but we had a chance to get outside and throw a little bit.
So he also acknowledged that the third year is a big year for a quarterback because that's when he'll be eligible for an extension. Except, smartly, he's not thinking about that. He knows that if he takes care of his business, the business will take care of him.
There's no need for that because if I win, good things will happen. Good things will happen for our team and the guys around me, and that's the most important part. So if I play better, that's why quarterback is one of those positions that's the hardest in sports. If I play better, our team's going to do better.
I like what I'm hearing. I like what I'm hearing. I like what I'm seeing. So now that I've let Baker have his chance to address everybody, it is time for me to address everybody as well. And in particular, I'm going to be addressing all of you who could not handle the heat and the blowback and then jump right off that bandwagon last year. So things did not go the way they expected. That'll happen. It happens all the time. Your hero, Michael Jordan, did not win his first NBA championship until his seventh year. Your boys, Orville and Wilbur Wright, did not just roll out of the bike shop one day and decide to start flying. They had a few missteps. Man, you think Tommy Edison rolled out of the rack one Monday morning and decided, hell, I think I'll invent the light bulb. Hell no, he didn't. This is the 2019 Browns. This is what happened to the Browns. It's not how many times you get knocked down. It's how many times you get back up. And these dudes are already off the mat. They're back. You want to bet against Baker Mayfield? Man, you go right ahead. You go right ahead. Me, I'm not. Me, I'm still rolling with the guy who walked on as a true freshman at Texas Tech. Won the starting job. Was named the Big 12 Offensive Freshman of the Year. I am still going to roll with the guy who then transferred to Oklahoma, walked on there, won the starting job again, led them to the playoffs twice, and won the Heisman Trophy. We're not talking about some cat who's had everything handed to him and is now facing adversity for the first time. We're talking about a guy who's had to fight for everything. This is a guy who has faced adversity time and time again and come out on top. This is more adversity. Hey, listen, you don't have to roll with him. I'm not trying to convince you to roll with him. I'm just saying I am. I'm not giving up on this guy. I'm still betting on a guy who has bet on himself repeatedly and has won. You don't have to, but I am. And in fact, not only am I still betting on him, I am still betting on the entire Browns team. Reason for that. Because I'm betting on Nick Chubb, I'm betting on Odell Beckham Jr., I'm betting on Jarvis Landry, I'm betting on Austin Hooper, I'm betting on Jack Conklin, I'm betting on J.C. Treader, I'm betting on Jedrick Willis Jr., I'm betting on Kevin Stefanski, I'm betting on a loaded defense, I'm betting on America's team. Yeah, so things didn't work out last year. That's life. You want to quit on the Browns? You want to quit on America's team? Man, you go right ahead. We don't need you. We are all we need. We are all we've got, and that's more than enough. I'm not bailing because bailing is not my way, and it's not the Cleveland Browns' way. You do not bail on America's team. Let me tell you something. If the Wright brothers and Edison bailed after the first attempt, man, we'd all be on the ground, sitting at home in the darkness. If Jordan had shut it down after the first few tries, he would have never denied Horace Grant his food, called Jerry Krause short and fat, and bullied the teammates who he knew couldn't take him. Baker has never quit on anything. I'm not quitting on him. Capital One knows life does not alert you about your credit card. Hey, couch surfers. We have got nonstop tunes to keep you rocking while you work. Oh, and Colleen. Yes, you, Colleen with a K. Your free trial of Movie Plus ends tomorrow, and your card may be charged. Do you want to continue or do you want to cancel? So meet Eno, the Capital One assistant. Eno looks out for surprise charges, like when free trials expire, and helps if you need to fix them. Eno, another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Limitations do apply. He is Mark Stein. Hey, Mark, what's up? How are you?
I just heard your rejoin music. Makes me feel young again. Love that.
I appreciate that. Me too, Mark. That's why it's there. Listen, as you pointed out...
For a minute, I feel young again.
Yeah, right? I feel you. So you pointed out on Twitter and in your newsletter both, there's a lot of momentum for the NBA to return at some point in the coming months. So how would you describe the situation right now?
Well, I don't think there's any question that they're going to come back. Everybody is basically operating now that that's going to happen in Orlando in terms of games. Late July is the league's stated target. Could it get pushed back even a little more? I think there is some fear of that. But still, the format, how it's going to look, how many teams, that we don't know, and that's what they're trying to hash out now. Is it 16, 30, 20, 24? Getting to that number and also exactly what the playoff structure will look like. That's the focus now. And then from there, the focus will ultimately shift back to the biggest issue, which is all the safety protocols that have to be followed. to make this thing work, which really, I mean, you know, we're spending so much energy now looking at formats, but to me, I'm much more curious about the safety protocols and how you make this, how you make the players, coaches, staffers feel safe and comfortable. That to me is still issue number one.
Mark Stein joining us. Mark, finish that thought. For instance, you raised the issue in your newsletter that you have a level of uneasiness about a return. Lay it out for me. How would you describe that uneasiness?
I just think, look, we're seeing, you know, soccer is making, to this point, what looks like a successful comeback in Germany. In England, they're going to be coming back. In America, Major League Soccer is coming back. But that sport is outside. It's a contact sport, but it's in a big, expansive outdoor stadium, and that's just different. I mean, the reality is basketball is a full contact sport indoors, and these guys are in much closer proximity than even in soccer. And so, you know, I just think it's going to be even more difficult for, you know, basketball might have it the toughest of all the team sports to try to get this thing back online because of that. And so I just, you know, I'm speaking purely for me, and nobody's asking my opinion except you, but I, the closer we get, you know, I'm nervous and I'm a worrier by nature. And I hope I'm just being, you know, my usual over worrying self. But, you know, I keep saying the league's get like, they're committed to going back, and I think you've heard Michelle Roberts from the Players Union say the players want to go back. But until teams are back in the, when teams get to this new campus environment that we've never seen, only then are we going to really learn what they think and how they feel about playing in these conditions and what happens when Team X loses two or three guys that have to go into quarantine because they've got the virus. And then how do the rest of the guys feel when that happens? And are they ready to come back to work the next day and keep playing? And I'm not saying I know the answer. I don't know the answer. I'm as curious as anyone to find out what that answer is.
Mark Stein joining us. All right, so that's a really interesting answer. I was going to say, Mark, like, for instance, when Rudy Gobert tested positive, of course, the league immediately shut down. Do we know what would happen if a player or a players tested positive during the playoffs?
Well, the league has described it as their plan and their hope. And we do not yet know the exact safety protocols. And again, it's going to be a long, long list. And at some point they will have to put on paper and spell out exactly what happened. But all the indications to this point have been that, like in Germany, in the Bundesliga, their approach is if a player, coach, staffer test positive, you quarantine that person and the rest of the group carries on. And, you know, you said it. You're having Quinn Cook on later today and Lloyd Pierce on later today. And again, you know, they're the ones who have to be in that gym. We're not going to be in there. And, you know, God forbid someone on the Lakers gets it, someone on the Hawks gets it, and the next day when that group reconvenes, how does that group really feel about, you know, one or two people have left, but we're just going to keep going while they quarantine for 2 weeks. Maybe it will work. I mean, maybe it will. And I hope it does. I want it to work, and I want basketball to come back as much as anyone. But I just think it's very hard to predict how this is going to go. Now, again, in Germany so far, from containing the virus aspect, they appear to be doing a really good job with all the protocols they've instituted, and they're now on their third week of games. The big problem in Germany has been injuries. There's been just a zillion soft tissue injuries because these guys have been off so long, and that's another thing that NBA teams are going to have to face, because by the time these guys come back, they will have been off more than 3 months. It's an unprecedented break. No professional basketball player takes 3 months off in 2020. So there's a lot to contend with, a lot. Teams are going to have a lot on their plates to get through this.
Mark Stein joining us. So, Mark, part of the discussion right now is how many teams would be invited to Orlando. You've made the point that 30 may be too many. Sam Amick followed that up by tweeting that he's already heard grumbling from agents about the disparity in hotel quality. At the same time, 70 regular season games for teams because of TV rights might make some sense. So for those who don't know, why is that number so critical?
Well, look, the league does want to play as many, you know, they do want to play some regular season games if they can manage it, because for most teams, if you don't deliver 70 games to your regional partners, you owe them a refund, or you will, you know, get penalized in future payments. You know, basically money will be owed back to the regional partners in some form or fashion. Now, a team like the Lakers doesn't fall into that category because they have so many games on national television, they couldn't deliver 70 to their regional partners. So it's not an across-the-board situation for all 30 teams, but that's a big motivation for the league. And then you bring in the basketball side of it. Teams don't want to jump right into the playoffs without a few games to get used to being, you know, get back to what it feels like to play real NBA 48-minute games. They don't just want to jump to the postseason. So, I think if the league would love to bring all 30 teams back, if it could. I think the fear is, for safety issues, when you're trying to construct this campus environment that theoretically keeps the virus out, it's just math. You know, the fewer teams you have, the better chance you give yourself of keeping everyone safe. So that's really been the case against 30 teams. But, you know, look, whatever number you come up, you know, any number that's not 30, there are issues with. If it's 16, then you don't have enough teams to play enough extra games. You go straight to the playoffs. Some teams don't like that. 20 teams will make some mad. 24 will make some teams mad. There's no way to satisfy everyone, and that's why you're hearing about so many different proposals. Everyone's looking for the magic formula that really just doesn't exist.
We are talking to Mark Stein. Now, Mark, there's really no way to predict, but you got to wonder what playoff games, for instance, would be like without fans. Like, for instance, there is a lot of cursing that goes on during games that's covered up by crowd noise. Without fans, we're going to be able to hear what players say to each other, what they say to refs, what coaches and assistant coaches say to refs, what the refs say back to them. What's your sense as to how the league might handle that?
It's a down-the-road issue for now, but I'm with you. It's a big one, and it's a big question. And look, I think all of us want the unedited audio. We all want to hear that, and you can understand why the league presumably would not want us to hear that. And, you know, certainly I think the players are going to have some say there as well, because, you know, unlike baseball, I think the NBA, you know, at least takes on board what it's, how its players think and feel a lot more than they're doing in MLB. So that is going to be fascinating. I don't know yet how that one works out, but there will certainly be a huge clamor for the public for us to hear it all. And you can imagine no players, coaches, or referees want us to hear any of it. So they're gonna have to figure that one out, because when, you know, in the soccer games, you know, a lot of these, you know, like in Germany, it's so multinational, there are a bunch of languages flying around, and also the stadium is so much bigger, it's hard to exactly pick up what these guys are saying. As you noted, in a basketball game, if the mics are there, we are going to hear it loud and clear, and you know how fast those clips are going to move across social media if we can hear them.
And no doubt. Mark Stein joining us. Listen, before you go, Mark, Jerry Sloan passed away last week. He was legendary for a number of things, including eating his pregame meal in the media room, which is amazing. What was that like, and what kind of memories do you have of him?
Yeah, he was so unique in that way. I mean, I've been doing this a long time, and in my 27 years, I don't ever remember any other coach who was just that comfortable, you know, dining with the nosy media before a game. I mean, he was just consistent. That's just the word that instantly pops into my head. You know, I remember him with the Bulls, but I can't really say that I saw him as a player. He was basically stopping with the Bulls just as I was really getting into the NBA. But just as a coach, he really is the most consistent man I've ever seen in this league. And as synonymous with the Jazz and consistency as Malone and Stockton were. And a story that I always tell, and I think it's important to note, you know, before the Spurs became the Spurs and before Greg Popovich became Pop, who we know by one name, Jerry Sloan was his role model. And the Utah Jazz, they were the blueprint for the Spurs. That's the team that they studied, envied, emulated, and modeled themselves after. So that's really all you need to know, because the Spurs became really became the NBA's model franchise. And the Jerry Sloan Jazz were the inspiration.
You know, I agree with you. I got such a kick out of Jerry Sloan. He was, as a player and a coach, so tough and so hard-nosed, but he was so fair. One more thought. I know you spoke to Mark Eaton about him. What did Eaton say?
Yeah, I had to call Eaton because just for my own personal kind of tie, Mark Eaton's the first NBA player that I ever got to interview in 1989. So because of that, it's always kind of a thing that sticks with me. And just, you know, I remember how terrified I was at 5'9" on a good day, trying to reach my tape recorder up to 7'4" Mark Eaton and get a quote from him when I didn't even really know what I should be asking him. But as you would imagine, I mean, he just has nothing but praise for the way Jerry was, and his quote, which I think was perfect, you know, toughness and fairness all rolled into one, that Jerry was the kind of guy who would really ride his players hard, but also back them a ton. And, you know, in the NBA, it's all about buy-in, and Malone and Stockton bought in to Jerry Sloan as much as you can. And when your superstars buy in, that's when you win.
All right, so 22 days, just playing with you. 22 days, 16 shows. That is all that stands between this here jungle and the most important, longest-running, legacy-defining, ball-busting, trash-talking, hardest-hitting, Twitter-trending, three-hour scorch fest symphony that we call the Smack-Off. This has been, without a doubt, one of the best run-ups to the event ever. And after a quarter century plus of doing this, I don't take that very lightly. I don't say that lightly. Look, I don't know if it's because of the pandemic, the stay-at-home orders, the pent-up energy, or just the fact that the year 2020 has been a fall-down, sloppy, wasted mess ever since the ball dropped in Times Square. Whatever it is, Smack-Off season has been incredible, and we're not done yet. Hell, in a few moments here, I'm about to dial up the heat 10 more notches. But before I do so, I want to once again talk directly to a handful of you. Golden ticket winners, where you at? Specifically, Danica in Jacksonville. Sarah T in Providence, where are you? I gave you those tickets because I want you in the event. But neither of you have done anything to convert that want into a need. And to say running out of time would be a gross understatement. There are only 16 shows between now and the Smack-Off. The extremely coveted spots are mostly spoken for already. The very little real estate, which is left, is still up for grabs, but it's not guaranteed. And you're in a dogfight with the likes of Chris in Toronto, Drizzle in Wichita, Matthias in Los Angeles. It's Matt in L.A. They're at least checking in with their tickets, protecting their tickets, but earning them and re-earning them. I badly want some lady clone representation the way I badly want some Canadian representation. Get up in here and do it before it's too late. Watch listers. You know who you are. Jeff in SoCal. Johnny Scabs in Detroit. Jason in Harrisburg. Your situation is even more dire. You're 22 days out. You don't even have an invite yet, much less a guaranteed spot. You should be hammering the phones every single day, doing whatever you can to snatch that ticket and get qualified. For the rest of you out there listening, I don't even know yet, or who I don't even know yet. If you're thinking to yourself, I can beat the BICs and the VICs and the RIBs, prove it. Show me. You can jump the watch list right to a ticket. and you can be so damn good that your ticket means more than anybody else's. It is possible. It's been done. Not often, but it's been done. It's not impossible. Get at it. This is normally where I would transition to a Smackoff player profile and give the treatment to one of the nine contenders that I haven't gotten to yet. But that's going to have to wait for another day. Today, Alvin DeLauro, the undisputed authority of audio, the Sultan of Sound, the best of the board, has turned in his homework like every other student in America right now. He's done it remotely. Alvin may not be here right now, but his annual Smackoff promo is. And if the profiles have wired the roof with C4, which they have, this promo is going to set it off. James Kelly, do not screw this up. All you have to do is hit play. You've got one job, big head. Are you ready? Don't jack it up. Just press play in 5, 4, big head, 3, 2, and 1.
Mom, it was like a smuggled heroin balloon at an airport. Rectum.
Who wants to walk with Jeff from Richmond?
Way to go, Daniel. Never heard that one before. But I guess we should expect that kind of trash coming from a guy who throws surprise birthday parties for his cat.
I'm a starving tiger for the title King of Smash. I want to come flying out of the ass of Cruz's car on that parachute that deploys out of nowhere for no reason whenever they cross the finish line.
Smack Off 26, June 19th.
The single greatest day of my life. Oh.
It is for the best of the best. It's invite only. Some of the biggest players.
You horse tooth jackass.
What the hell was the point of that, badass?
Some of the dirtiest players in the game. Caleb.
Don't mess with the walrus, young man. You'll get the tusk.
Maybe you should just bring your mom on again, and she can apologize for being such a failure as a parent.
Cal in Vegas.
Rick, you ain't gonna do nothing. As soon as you get down here, I'm putting you in a chokehold. And I'm not letting go until your face turns the same color as your bright red alcoholic nose.
And you get to the end of those double rainbows.
Double rainbow.
Will there be two Cals in Vegas with a pot of gold?
Canadians.
Oh, you
better go. That's not a good call.
Somebody please collectively get these nerds some hookers.
Mark in Hollywood.
What up, slut? Tough smack talking Canadians? Really?
Mark, you're a nerd.
Benny.
And I'll bet you 5,000 pine cones that you'll be looking up at me again. Lump these, Maddie.
Left in Laguna.
And Benny, two words you don't want to hear from Romy after your call.
Tactical error.
Made a tactical error.
Dirty dudes in a phone call. Gimmicky bitches like us.
Jeff in Southfield.
Jim, you're literally my bestest friend.
Mike in Indy.
Jeff received the ultimate compliment any Smackoff caller could ever receive. At one point, everyone thought he was me.
Vic.
See, that's what I do. I provide content. I supply the stuff that keeps this whole operation afloat.
Rick in Buffalo.
There's a reason why Vic's on rank, and I'm the world's number one contender. Now back to the basement, victim.
Sean, the Cowboy Nation.
I pick up the phone. I call. I win. I win more than anybody because I am the best at this. Always have been. Always will be.
Five-time champ, Brad in Corona.
R.I.P. to Shawnee's radio career and his pulmonary arteries. At this point, it's a toss-up as to which one's going to go first. But personally, Jim, I'm rooting for the arteries.
$5,000. Are you in? Not without an invite, you're not.
Jim, I do think to him that you would have been a barnyard animal.
Patriot. Brah. Citizen. Brah.
Me being left on hold was the worst thing to ever happen to all of you.
Good God.
Do me a favor and forget my name.
What's my name, boob?
And the rest of you just need to clear your calendar.
The Smack Off.
June 19th. Let's do this.
Mesothelioma.
Okay.
We're done when I say we're done.
Pretty cool. Something proper. 26 years of this, it has never sounded better. You're not going to find what you just heard on any other radio program in the world. 3 minutes of that is about to become 3 hours of that. June 19th, $5,000, King of Smack, legend status. Who wants some? Come get it. You are running out of time. You need to know this particular song. It's on topic, in market, coming off The Last Dance. Everybody was talking about Michael Jordan for weeks because of The Last Dance. What do you think of when you think of Michael Jordan? A million different things. If you think about it long enough and you think about it hard enough ultimately, you may get to this if you know this show. If you think that I'm padding to give time to the big head, you'd be right. All right, so there was a famous song called Michael's Dad, written by an infamous songwriter by the name of Neems. Neems, way, way, way back in the day, sent me this song. And he sent it to me on a CD. I opened it up. I listened to it. I played it on the air and said it might have been the worst song I'd ever heard. Neems did not take kindly to that. Neems wanted to make sure that I knew that that song had been heard in like 30 different countries. The song sounded like this. That's Neems.
We've all been watching number 23 perform like no athlete.
So I don't want to be disrespectful and step all over this guy's life's work, but imagine me just being at work one day at my desk. And understand, the world was very different then. This is back, I don't even know when this was, 90s. And I get this, and I'm like, holy crap, this is terrible.
How proud he must have been to be Michael's dad.
I mean, just singing his guts out, how proud he must have been to be Michael's dad. Each time you heard the crowd cheer,
how great it must have felt to be my.
Anyway, record scratch, that's that. That was Neems. And for years and years and years, Neems was furious with me. And like a lot of beefs, it just kind of reconciled itself. He did a song about me. We came together. It's fine. It's good. So with that in mind, and you have that background, let's now go to another guy known for butchering and murdering music. Parody Larry. Hello, Lawrence. What's up?
Hey, Ron. What's cracking? How are you? Hey, listen, the Smack-Off's coming, and I hope Deech and the Fort Queen Bar will be open when this damn quarantine is over. And Silk, by the way, stop videoing yourself in a hot tub. Those man boobs? Silk, you need a bra, bra. Anyway, now that I've digested all 10 episodes of The Last Dance, a few things come to mind, Rome. MJ is the GOAT, but he also showed us what an insane egomaniac he was. And when he came out with his Air Jordan kicks, he single-handedly made sneakers.
That's not a good call. No.
Damn it, Larry.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Larry. Larry, I am pissed. I'm not even going to pretend that I'm not. Larry, how many times have we covered this? How many times? Every bleeping time. Your parody, Larry. You're not horrible take, Larry. You're not bad take, Larry. You're parody, Larry. It's taking everything I have not to curse. Get to the bleeping parody, Larry. Did you not just hear me set your entire call up by going through the whole Neems thing, Larry? I did that for you, bleeping Larry. Your handle, your gloss, the thing you're known for, is parodies. Parody bleeping Larry. Not bad take, Larry. I'm not going to say it again, Larry. Do not come on this show and start running out horrible takes. Get to the bleeping song. This is who you are. This is what you're known for. Nobody's listening to your takes, Larry. God. What the hell is the matter with you, Larry? How many times have we covered this? At least a dozen. But I'm fine. I said what I had to say. I made my point. I think that Larry got that point. And I'm not going to be in a bad mood or harbor this grudge or carry it forward. I have a job to do. And by the way, I'm happy. I'm fine. I'm good. In fact, so much so, I think that he got the message. And I'm going to let him come back on right now and do what he set out to do, because I don't harbor a grudge. I made my point. So let's do it again, and let's do it right. And I'm happy to do so. Let's go to the phones. We go to Parody Larry. Good to have you on the show, Larry. How are you?
I appreciate this, Rome. This is for Neems. I have Frady and Father.
Ah, yeah, I'm not anything like my old man, and I'm not fine.
You don't like that car.
I'm not
like
kidding you, Larry.
Car.
I am still
not
pissed.
A very good car.
Yeah, long break my ass. Long break. If that break were my two-week break that I'm coming up, I have coming up, maybe then. It's still not all right, Larry. Let me tell you something, Larry. Larry, you are in jungle quarantine. You are in a jungle lockdown. Larry, let's talk social distancing, except let's talk about it as jungle distancing. You keep that mask on and you don't get within 1,000 miles of this show. All right? 6 feet. 6 feet, my ass. How about 6 weeks? How about 6 months? Let me tell you something, my man. You are your own jungle virus right now. You are your own jungle pandemic. I am really unhappy, Larry. Do not call this show and start running your gap with bad takes. Do your parody. I'm nothing like my old man. I have not forgotten. Yeah, 5 minutes was going to make that right. The hell it was. You keep that mask on and you stay in your jungle quarantine. All right? And don't risk infecting any of us with your bad takes. Come on, man. Incredible. I apologize for that last segment. See what the reaction is. Sean Rohasek's in. Horrible segment. That was an epic segment. Yeah, no, it wasn't. Stucknut wants back in. He's part of the problem, by the way, Stucknut. Lawrence not getting to his parody is like Leffen Laguna not getting to the gimmick. That's not true. Part of my argument in defense of Leff is he's not, quote, just a gimmicky little bitch. He's got gears. He's got a rap. He can talk smack. He can do other things. He's not just that. All right, now this guy has a golden ticket. This guy's taking pretty seriously what I've said about those golden tickets. You have to earn it and re-earn it. Don't hide. Don't hoard it. Don't spin clock. Man, show up here and earn that thing. He's taking it to heart. Let's go to Toronto. Chris in Toronto. Chris, how are you?
Hey, what's up, Jim? Hey, yo, have you seen that social media meme where it says nobody, nobody, and it says absolutely nobody on earth, and then they post audio of something? Yeah, that was the Callen Vegas promo yesterday. Jim, has there ever been someone in the jungle that gets more runs for doing less? Cal, calling up and telling people you're going to fight them isn't a take. I get that everyone needs a stick, my man, but Rick and Buffalo already have this one taken. Also, you have another problem going for you, which is, we've seen your picture, my dude, and nobody is buying this tough guy stick. So, Jim, please, for the love of God, just chopper this dude already. Now, Jim, I've heard a lot of the Canadian slander, including from your boy Hawk, who was taking a victory lap after we called last. And believe me, this is going to hurt me more than Jim because I actually like Hawk. But did a guy that, A, looks for friends on tennis Tinder, B, hurt his back putting on golf shoes, and C, got wasted in New York and woke up without a stash, call another person's history pathetic? And Big Head, you were there for that. Talk, how does someone with a mustache like yours that makes you look like an undercover cop going undercover as an undercover cop call someone else pathetic? Okay, Hawk? So get off of us. But Jim, look, I get it. People don't like Canada, and it looks like some of my fellow Canadians don't either. So I've just had to go full Jason Kelsey, go buy my genie costume, and sing, no one likes us, no one likes us, no one likes us, we don't care. And see, that's the thing, see, because after my last call, people wanted to hear the chopper, and it didn't happen. And here's why, clones. It's because I follow the simple rules. Have a take, don't suck. I know that I did run a little long, but I had takes. So sorry, you-know-who tweeted a picture of a chopper going down. Jim, it's hilarious to me that I'm new here, and I'm already so deep in some of these dudes' heads, they're begging you to chopper me because they can't take me out themselves. They're nervous that the only thing going down are their Stucknut odds. And no, I ain't saying your name either. I'm already tired of making people famous from my calls. Now, look, I know you guys don't know me very well, so let me tell you a little something about myself. I am not afraid. I'm not afraid to call, and I am not hiding.
No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that.
Hey, Chris, if you have a golden ticket and you get run while in the midst of holding on to that golden ticket, you know what that means, don't you? The chopper has arrived, and now it's gone. My guest is Quinn Cook. Quinn, there's a lot to talk to you about, and a lot regarding the documentary in the current season. But before we get there, let me ask you, how are you and everybody around you doing during this really unusual time, Quinn?
Jim, how you doing, man? Pleasure again. Being on the show, big fan always. I'm great. I'm still, trying to take every precaution as possible. Just trying to, still practice social distancing. And my only time being out the house really is going to the gym, going to our facility every day. That's like a field trip for me. I can't wait to wake up and get my 2-3 hours out the house. And, my family's good. And, we're still trying to take every precaution as possible.
I feel you. Quinn Cook is joining us. It's great to have you on, and lots to talk about, as I mentioned, Quinn. You know, from the outside, one of the things that seems really obvious about the Laker team is the amazing chemistry that you guys have. How would you describe that chemistry, and then how did you guys stay in touch and maintain that chemistry throughout the shutdown?
I think that's the best part about being on a team is how close everyone is, and it's genuine. It's genuine. It started from, when we all signed and we knew who all was going to be on the team. Bron created a group chat, and ever since then, every single day we communicate. And I think that's what made this season, what has made this season so special, is just genuinely we're just having a lot of fun. Everybody was happy for each other. And obviously winning cares a lot, but it started in the locker room. Obviously during this time, with us not being with each other every day and seeing each other every day, our group chat has been even more active. Guys are, on their phones, more than usual during this time. So we always talking, and it's just something that, we always have to hold each other accountable, because when we get back, we still have to have, that goal that we had in the beginning of the season in mind, and that's, trying to be the best team we could be. So definitely been an unusual time, but, our leaders and everybody, we're so close together. Our coaching staff checks in with us daily. Front office, management, everybody checks in the organization. And, we've just been trying to still remain together during this time.
Lakers guard Quinn Cook is joining us. He's got a brand new documentary out where he's an EP. We'll talk about that momentarily. So, Quinn, what's your reaction when you hear about the possibility of being at Disney World for a few months to finish off the season? Is that something that kind of excites you, or do you have some concerns about that?
For me, that excites me. I think, this is just a step forward. This country getting back, safer and getting back to the norm. Obviously, we all want to play, and we all want to get back to playing basketball. It's our sanctuary. It's therapeutic for all of us. It's our getaway. But at the same time, still want to be as safe as possible. Still want to, make the right decisions for everybody. And I think the NBA and the league has done a tremendous job of just, making sure our health and safety is the first concern. And, I know guys want to get back to playing, but, I know Adam Silver and the rest of the league is going to make the best decision for everybody's health and not just the players, our families as well. So I think us going to Orlando would be great. It's like AAU all over again. I think we all grew up playing, at the Disney Milk House growing up. So that'd be cool. For it just to come full circle and just to get back to playing basketball and just seeing all my NBA guys and just making sure they're okay and it'll be a fun experience if it happens.
Talking to Quinn Cook. Quinn, there's also this argument. I'm not going to make it myself, but there's an argument that you get in some circles that if and when you guys do come back, whoever wins this thing is going to immediately get an asterisk hung right on them. How do you feel about that notion, or might you turn that on its head and say, hey, listen, it's actually harder to win in a year like this?
Yeah, I seen Austin Rivers say it about a month ago that, I think the team who wins it this year, they really deserve it to go through this. Nobody has an advantage. Nobody's been, able to really get into a gym. All the facilities have been closed until recently. Teams haven't been together at all. I think for us to stay mentally, in the fight, even though, we haven't had basketball in 2.5 months and haven't been around our teammates in 2.5 months, so for us to stay in communication, to stay in the fight, hold each other accountable and still take care of ourselves, to prepare to get ready to go back playing basketball, I think is even harder. Obviously during the summer when you're getting ready for a regular training camp, you have your routine, you have your trainers, you have access to gyms. you know, to come and camp in some kind of shape. Now, you know, gyms haven't been open at all. So I don't think it'll be an asterisk next to whoever wins it. I think, you know, it should be a regular championship. I'm not going to say we should appreciate this championship more than others, but, you know, to go 3 months, 3.5 months, however long it takes to get back playing without, you know, practicing, playing, and being around your teammates, you still have to stay in the fight, you know, through a tough time. So whoever wins it this year, you know, really deserves it.
He is a guard for the L.A. Lakers, also the executive producer of Basketball County in the Water. It's available now on Showtime. In fact, why don't we talk about the doc right now? What this is, Quinn, it's about Prince George's County, Maryland, where you grew up. So let me start right there. What was life like growing up in PG County?
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun for me. You know, you had a mix of everything. It's one of the, you know, wealthiest, predominantly black counties in the world, obviously it has you know, your rough areas, your poverty areas. So you had the best of both worlds. Sports wise, you know, we have, you know, a lot of basketball players come out. You have a lot of football players, boxers, and just a lot of athletes. So that was fun, just being around, just, you know, so many sports. And as for basketball is the biggest culture. It gets the most love, you know. I think it's the most paid attention to sport in our area. So I had a lot of guys to, you know, look up to, who I can go touch, and a lot of people who I could watch on TV who was from, you know, our county. And all the guys that I grew up idolizing, you know, from our area, they always came back and gave. It wasn't like we had to reach out to them as younger players. All the older players who I idolized, they always came back and gave us game and advice and gave us the blueprint to make it. So for me, like, it was fun growing up, meeting people who I still, you know, call family and brothers to this day at a young age, and just watching everybody reach their dream. It's been an ultimate great feeling for me.
Quinn Cook joining us. It's amazing. Now, for those who don't really know what we're talking about here, Quinn, we're talking about guys, an area that produced guys like Kevin Durant, Michael Beasley, Victor Oladipo, the Grant brothers. I mean, this list goes on and on and on. When you come up like that and you're surrounded by talent like that, how much does that inspire you, and what were those battles like?
Those battles were the best. Those battles were the best. I think you know, that's what made our growing up so special. I know for me, you know, idolizing KD and Nolan Smith and, you know, Calvin Cage and Beasley, Jerry Jack, Jeff Green, all those guys that I could see, you know, on a daily basis, they gave me the blueprint. So, you know, growing up, you know, I went to elementary school, middle school, and high school with Victor Oladipo, Jeremy Grant, Jaren Grant, all those guys. So, you know, we had somebody to look to every single day. We always held each other accountable. And we all grew up together, so there was one gym, maybe two gyms that we all could go to. So we always had to see each other and test out, you know, how good we really were. And, you know, it was just fun because that's what made us who we are today. And just growing up hearing stories about the great Len Bias and Walt Williams and DeMar Johnson, Keith Bogans, it was just, you know, just legendary stories that kept us, you know, motivated, you know, to reach our dreams, because it was possible, because guys, you know, coming from where we come from did the same thing. So I think the blueprint was already laid early, and all we had to do was just follow it.
Quinn Cook is joining us. Adrian Dantley also was one of the ultimate ballers. You know, they're from the same area. There's a lot of talk about, like, what a New York player is like or what an L.A. player is like. How would you describe a PG County player? Is there something that separates you guys from everybody else?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously you can distinguish a person's game where they're from. If you think about a New York player or an L.A. player or a player from North Carolina, anything like that, obviously they kind of have the same kind of game. I mean, different positions, but, you know, you could tell. I know a person from a city can tell, you know, another person from that city. Us, I think that we all, like, have, like, just one-on-one game, like one-on-one moves. I think we're all able to score the basketball. That's, like, big where we're from. I feel like everybody who comes out is able to score a little bit. Obviously, everybody, you know, has a toughness to each other about just everybody and just that pride of our, you know, hometown and the guys from my hometown. But, you know, I just think we have a mixture of everything. We can play one-on-one. We can shoot a little bit. Got to lock in defensively. And we just have that aura about ourselves that we don't feel like we're better than anybody. But just for our names, our county to be mentioned with the big cities and big states and stuff, that means a lot to us because our county doesn't have a million people. So that means a lot as well.
Quinn Cook joining me for a few more moments. You know, Quinn, they don't just hand out EP titles and documentaries to show up on Showtime. You were in this thing. Your involvement in documentaries and film goes way back, actually. There's a story about when you were at Duke, you interviewed Spike Lee after seeing him at Madison Square Garden. How did that conversation come to be, and what do you remember about the interview?
I was in a documentary class, and one of my favorite movies was Malcolm X, Spike Lee, and I was writing a paper on that. And we go up to Madison Square Garden, Duke versus Michigan State. It was the game that Coach K passed Bobby Knight my freshman year, and me and my academic advisor were real close, Kenny King. So we're at the game. Obviously, Spike's at the game, and we're walking into halftime, and my academic advisor was just like, "Yo, like, there goes your boy, like, you should go talk to him." I'm like, "All right, cool." So we come out of halftime before we warm up for the second half, and I just go straight to him. "Spike, my name's Quinn. You know, big fan. You know, my mom's from New York. She's, like, one of your biggest fans ever. You know, I would love to talk to you. I'm actually writing a paper, you know, on your Malcolm X movie." He was like, "Perfect, cool. Like, you know, I love your game. You know, I've heard your story. Here's my email." He gives his email to my academic advisor. So, you know, we email him right after the game. He emails us right back. And I want to say this was a Tuesday. And I want to say he was in Durham that Friday. He came to an early practice. We had an early practice. He flew to Durham. And he watched his practice, got to talk to coach for a little bit. And after practice, I got to interview him. He allowed me to interview him for about an hour. And, you know, it was about the movie, about, you know, Denzel's role and how he transformed himself into Malcolm, and just different questions on different movies that he's produced and he's been a part of. And then we just started talking hoops. I remember we talked a lot about Kobe. We talked a lot about the Lakers. Obviously, I grew up the biggest Lakers fan, so he was giving me a little stuff about the Lakers. I was talking trash about his Knicks. He gave me some MJ stories, and that was something I'll never forget. And he still remembers that. He still always reminds me of that to this day every time I see him. And he gave me a couple assignments during the interview that, you know, next time I saw him, I had to, you know, I had to be done. He wanted me to read, obviously, Alex Haley's biography on Malcolm X. So I had to read that, and every time he sees me, he always checks in on me. And that was something he didn't have to do, and he made my day. He made my year, actually, and something I still brag on to this day. So I really appreciate Spike for doing that for me.
That's an amazing story. That is a really, really cool story. Quinn, before you go, you mentioned Kobe, so let me just ask you this. I mean, I can't let you go without asking about Kobe. I know how much he meant to you and how special that relationship was for you. In Game 2 of the Finals last year, you hit three threes, and you were absolutely enormous in that win. Sometime later, Kobe saw you and talked to you about that. What did he tell you, and what did that mean to you?
Well, it meant the world. It meant the world. He told me I had big cojones. You know, if anybody knows Kobe, that's how he talked. And, you know, that meant the world because the year before that, in Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals, you know, I missed, you know, a shot for the game to win the game at the same spot. And, you know, I'm getting killed on social media. This is my first, like, big-time playoff, experience. And I don't want to say mistake, but, you know, I didn't come through. I felt bad after the game. You know, I remember Steph, you know, he was texting me a lot that night. Just, you know, keep your head up. Shoot every shot. Draymond texted me. And I was with Kevin the whole night. I was in his room, and we were just talking about adjustments because we were down 3-2. And my mom just texted me like, "Yo, that's going to be your Kobe moment." That's all I would think that night. I just remember, you know, Kobe, you know, his rookie year, 97, playoffs against Utah, three straight air balls. And that's what I just kept replaying in my mind. Like, it's my Kobe moment. And obviously, he's my idol. He's my favorite player growing up. So, you know, that was my motivation. So, for me to hit three threes the next year
in the finals, you know, at the same spot. That was big for me. And, you know, I just always were playing my mom. Like, that's my Kobe moment. This is my Kobe moment. And then for him to acknowledge that, like, the next time I saw him, you know, that meant the world to me because, you know, obviously, you know, he's everything to me and everything to basketball. So for him to acknowledge that, because I didn't even tell him that, you know, I was thinking about him in that moment. But, you know, for him to acknowledge me in that moment to because he knows how much, you know, he means to me, that meant a lot. And, you know, that made my entire life. And it's obviously the last time we really got to break bread and speak. And I'll cherish that moment forever.
Quote, that made my entire life. Quinn, you've had an amazing basketball life already. Fact is, NBA champ, NCAA champ, two-time first-team All-G-Leaguer, All-American, undrafted out of Duke, and now an EP, executive producer of Basketball County in the Water. It is available on Showtime. Quinn, I'm glad you and I could come together like that. Congrats on the doc. It's great. Really good to have you on the show. Let's make sure you guys get back to work and we can do it again.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it always, Jim. Thanks for having me.
I'm talking about Lloyd Pierce. Lloyd, it's so good to have you back. There's a lot that I want to talk to you about, but before I do anything else, let me ask you how you and your wife and your daughter and everybody around you are in the middle of this pandemic. Lloyd, how is everything?
Jim, I appreciate you having me on. Thanks for asking. We're doing well. I'm here in Atlanta, sitting out on my front yard. Hopefully it's not too noisy. But the wife as well, baby girl is almost 22 months, and it's been a great opportunity just to spend some time with her during the pandemic. You know, we're all trying to get through this the same way and have to find a silver lining, and that's it for us is the family time.
Now, she's just 22 months, Lloyd, but I know that you were watching The Last Dance with your baby girl. She might be a little bit too young to appreciate it herself, but what did you make of that series?
You know, it's amazing. She learned the word Michael Jordan. She knows how to
great.
Say it. So I appreciate that. You know, for me, it was a trip back down memory lane. You know, I'm a big Jordan fan. I grew up on Jordan. I grew up on Magic Johnson. I grew up on 90s basketball. To revisit that and to really realize how different the NBA is from that time period was fun to watch. And it was fun to share with our guys, our team, because the game's just different now. It's a different approach. You know, the practices, the lack of access that, you know, obviously we had the access to watch that video, but that's such a rare thing for that time period. Whereas now it's just access to everything. Social media is access to everything, but that wasn't the case back then. So to see some of that footage and to know the things that were going on, it just seems like a new story that we didn't have access to back then. So I was fascinated watching it. I loved it.
It was fascinating. Really compelling. Lloyd Pierce joining us. It feels like there is momentum growing now for the season to return at some point in the coming months. So what kind of thoughts do you have when you think about resuming this season?
You know, Jim, we're in a weird spot. You know, we're such a young team. I knew when I took this job that we were going to be on a timeline of growth and really trying to build this organization from our roster up. And it was going to take time. And one of the things that's really valuable for us is games played. All five of our main guys, our top five, I call them the core five, you know, John Collins, Trey Young, Kevin Herter, Cam Reddish, and DeAndre Hunter, you know, integral part of what we're doing here. All of those guys are averaging double figures, and they're all 3 years or less, and for the most part, 2 years or less. And, you know, the beauty of what we're seeing here in Atlanta is they're getting game experience, and they're going to grow a little bit faster than most young guys are able to because of that game experience. And so we are dying to play. We need to play. It's important for the long-term growth of this organization and for those guys specifically. And that's, we miss it, and we need the opportunity to play basketball, and we really hope that we can resume and we can be a part of it. But our situation is different than every other team in the league because of our youth. So there's so many arguments, there's so many logistics and things to worry about. We want to just worry about what we can, and that's trying to provide the best opportunity for our young guys, which is to resume basketball and to be able to play again.
Atlanta Hawks head coach Lloyd Pierce is joining us. You're so right. Everybody's got a different situation. Now, when you and I spoke last year, we talked about the games in Cherry Park back in the day. I mentioned I just had Quinn Cook on the show. He talked about growing up in PG County, Maryland, and all the competition that was around him. How valuable was it for you to grow up in a spot where you would show up to the courts and you had to fight? I mean, battle for everything against really good competition on the way up.
You know, the beauty of sport is competition, and I don't care what sport we're talking about. That's the thing I miss the most as a player is just that ability to compete. It said something about you when you were in junior high and you can go to the park and it was all, you know, college players, a grown man, and you were able to earn your keep. And, you know, and if you weren't ready, you weren't able to get back on the court. And so there was just something about that feeling that when you left that day, and you stayed on the court multiple games because you were winning or because you were respected. Like, that's a good feeling. That's a real good feeling as a competitor, and you want that feeling more and more. I think that's a huge part of our sport. I think that's a huge part of what is really important in all the sport. It teaches so many lessons, and it's valuable. And I try and preach that, and you try and express it. You try and talk to guys about it. There's nothing like competition. And, you know, I'm glad Quinn was able to get through what he was able to in PG County and everybody, wherever they grew up. But everybody has their own take on competition and what that means to them. That's the greatest thing we have in sport is the ability to compete, to take on challenges and to overcome challenges. I love it.
Talking to Atlanta Hawks head coach Lloyd Pierce. I love hearing that. You know, Lloyd, I really enjoyed the conversation you and I had last summer. And the reason for that, we didn't just talk basketball. We talked about life. And I bring that up because in the wake of a police officer killing George Floyd, you posted a photo of yourself on Instagram with the caption, and I quote, "There is an appropriate fear being a black man in America. Feeling safe, protected is not an option for me. To think justice for Floyd could easily be justice for Lloyd, and it's because we look alike. To those who discredit our existence, we are recycling hashtags and protest to no avail." End of quote. What kind of thoughts and emotions have you had since the killing of George Floyd by police officers?
You know, it's an emotional one, to be honest with you. What a tough week this has been for me. Personally, for African American men, and I really think for our country, it's not right. I think the incident that happened in New York, where the man at the Bird Park brought out his camera, and the incident that occurred where the lady accused him of assaulting her in a park and premeditated the accusation. It was the scariest thing I've ever seen in my life as a black man. It's literally like watching someone accuse you of something and then having the power to make it happen. And that's the reality. And the very next day you wake up and the reality is a man was killed for no reason. And so when you put the two together, you're afraid that you've become a threat just for the skin of your color. And then the reality is because of the skin of your color, there's an opportunity, there's a chance that your life can be taken. And so I posted that picture and I zoomed in on my face and I had to explain this to a lot of people. If I zoom out, you say, "Oh, that's Coach Pierce." When you zoom in, you just see my face and you just see a black man. And I become just that, just the black man. And a black man is in fear right now. And so it's been an extremely tough week for me personally because of just that. I'm not an NBA head coach. I don't have any privilege. I am a black man, and that's not going to go away. The NBA head coach could. The fear of being a black man could go away, but it isn't. It hasn't. And right now, it's at its worst point. And so I this has been a very tough and emotional week. For me personally.
Agreed. Lloyd, I want to make one more point, too. I want to read part of your post again so that people can really hear it and take this in. Quote, "To think hashtag justice for Floyd could easily be hashtag justice for Lloyd, and it's because we look alike to those who do discredit our existence. And you did just touch on this, but what does it feel like to know that that hashtag could have your name instead of his?
Well, I think the sometimes you say the reality is it could happen. I think it's almost at this point the inevitable. This is no longer a one-off. It hasn't been for a while. It isn't a one-off. You know, these aren't just happening randomly. These are happening often. These are happening consistently. You know, the last one just happened to be in Minnesota. And the next one could happen in Atlanta or could happen in L.A. I don't know. And who knows who it's going to be. But it's no longer just the reality. It's almost an inevitable that it's going to happen. That's why I put the tag. You know, it's not just because we have similar names. It's because we are black. And to some, that's all it needs to be. And that's what's scary.
He is a member of USA Basketball's coaching staff. Of course, the head coach of the Atlanta Hawks. It's a conversation we had to have, continue to need to have. Second season with the Hawks. Lloyd, I appreciate you. I appreciate you. I appreciate your thoughts. I appreciate you coming on this program. And I appreciate having that conversation with you, Lloyd. Thank you so much. And let's do it again soon.
Jim, you got it. I appreciate it.
Good night now!